Ready to proceed?
Good afternoon, Your Honors. I am seated for Catherine Hadley, and I'd like to introduce Mr. Ed Lowe, who will be arguing for Kelly.
Welcome to the court.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is Jack Phillips. I represent E.I. DuPont Dina Moores, one of the defendants herein. However, I'm speaking on behalf of all six of the defendants. Mr. Albert Manwaring, counsel for Honeywell, will also address the court once I am finished. The question presented to the court today is very specific, and that question is whether a contractor's employee who is injured by work of another contractor on the site has a cause of action against the landowner arising from the hazard that other contractor created. The answer is that absent control by the landowner over the contractor that created the hazard, there is no cause of action against the landowner. Section 343 does not make the landowner indirectly liable for the negligence or hazard caused by his contractor if the landowner did not exercise control over that contractor. The key fact here is that the hazard at issue did not pre-exist the plaintiff's entry upon the land. It was created by an independent contractor performing work contemporaneously with or after plaintiff's entry upon the premises. That is, after the landowner had ceded control of the premises to those contractors. Remember, the use of asbestos is not an ultra-hazardous activity. The hazard from asbestos arises from how the contractor uses the asbestos. The trial court found, and there's been no appeal from that finding, that the landowners herein did not exercise control over the plaintiff's work or over the work that caused the hazardous condition. The plaintiffs are asking this court to impose a new tort duty on landowners by making landowners indirectly or vicariously liable for work being performed on their land over which they did not and were not exercising any control.
Oh, Mr. Phillips, let me ask you about this portion of the Superior Court's opinion. This is on page 16. And what it says, in this case, where the landowner specifies the use of asbestos or orders work to be done on existing asbestos and is conceivably aware of the risk of asbestos exposure and where clouds of asbestos dust are present in the work premises, the court finds the landowner has a duty of care to other subcontractors pursuant to 343 without regard to who controlled the work.
Yes, Justice Holland.
So you're just saying that that is an error of law with regard to 243, or those facts don't exist, or, and that seemed to be important to the Superior Court.
I'd say a couple things in response to that, Justice Holland. First of all, I think the lower court overlooked this court's holding in Merson versus Winter Museum. If you'll recall, in Merson versus Winter Museum, that landowner had specs and design drawings that he gave the contractor. He tweaked those specs and design drawings. He then exercised supervision over how the work was done. And yet this court held that in the absence of control over the actual manner and methods of the work that was performed, there was no liability. So, number one, the mere specking of asbestos-containing products does not create liability. Number two, there are the comments as to the existence of the dust are comments that clearly indicate that it's the independent contractor's work that's creating the hazard. And that was precisely my point. That is that this landowner, all these landowners, had ceded control over these work sites. I mean, the court below found that. Judge Babiar said that we were not in control of either the plaintiff's work or the contractor's work. So it is the contractor that is creating this hazardous condition.
Well, let me stop you there, because you said a moment ago that the hazard did not pre-exist the contractor's entry on the land, right?
Correct.
The court said that they were being asked to either perform asbestos work or perform work with asbestos, which would be consistent with what you just said, and work on existing asbestos. So that suggests to me, at least, that there was asbestos on the property when these contractors, or at least in some cases, when these contractors arrived.
I think that's it's correct, Justice Berger, that there was asbestos on the property. That is, that there were pipes that were insulated with asbestos.
And that they were working on them.
But just the existence of asbestos is not, you know, a hazard. It is how the work is done on that asbestos. Then the landowners hired competent contractors. The plaintiffs themselves admit they were competent contractors to do this work. They say these people performed in a workmanlike manner. They don't allege that these people did anything negligent even, but they say they performed in a workmanlike manner. We hired competent independent contractors to go work on existing asbestos. That is not an ultra hazardous activity. Those competent contractors are required to take precautions as to any hazards that their work would create. If they should fail to do so, the burden should be on them.
I think I understand what you're saying, but I thought your complaint about the way the court interpreted Section 343 was that that would only apply if there was a pre-existing hazard on the land, that maybe then the landowner would have some responsibility. And wasn't there a pre-existing hazard here?
No, there was not, Your Honor.
Asbestos is not a hazard because it can be dealt with?
Yes, absolutely.
But the fact that something can be worked around and with proper precautions, perhaps you won't get injured by it, doesn't mean it's not a hazard. If you have a hole in the ground, you can walk around it, but it's still a hazard. And it's something that you would arguably have to tell somebody about.
But, Your Honor, it's already been determined in this state that the working with asbestos is not an ultra hazardous activity, which in and of itself leads to the conclusion that it is possible to work with it safely. And if you don't work with it safely, yes, it may create a hazard, just like anything else you don't work with safely. But the mere fact that there is asbestos insulation does not mean there's a hazard. There's no hazard until they work with it improperly.
All right, so we're being asked to agree or to find that asbestos existing in a property that contractors are going to come and work with, the fact that there's asbestos there is not a hazard.
It is not a hazard. Asbestos exists in our schools. We went through a program of trying to remove the asbestos and decided to stop because you're creating a greater risk than leaving it in place. The mere existence of asbestos in place is not a hazard.
Mr. Phillips, let me make sure I understand your position and where we are. In response to Justice Holland's quote from the trial court's opinion and the reference to 343, your position is, as I understand it, that that finding by him is contrary to current law, and that there is at least one case that suggests, fitting near the facts of this case, that what we're talking about here is not the mere presence of asbestos before work begins, but it's working with asbestos when it's under the control of the contractor that would create a hazard, and that the contractor should bear the responsibility of dealing with that hazard and not the landowner. Now, if that is in fact the law, and if the case you cited, the Winter case, is distinguishable, should not Judge Babiard's view be the law from this point forward? And if not, why not?
It should not, Your Honor, because Judge Babiard's did not require that there be any control element to Section 343, and that's what allowed him to arrive at this conclusion.
Well, why is that important?
Because in this instance, Your Honor, he found that we were not in control of either the plaintiff's work or the contractor's work that created the hazardous condition. 343 requires an element of control. You can only find liability under 343 if there has been control exerted. This court has ruled in Furick versus the University of Delaware that Section 344, the commercial equivalent of 343, requires control. The court specifically so stated. In Furick, the court went through a control analysis and then went on to say that 343 is just the same as 344. This court has held in DeAssi versus Maroney that 343 and 344 are the same. So my view is that in order to uphold Judge Babiard's position and the plaintiff's position, this court would have to do the following things. It would have to overturn its finding in Merson versus Winter Museum. It would have to overturn its finding in Furick versus the University of Delaware. And it would have to ignore the two policy reasons that Judge Babiard cited in his ROPA opinion, which this court adopted and affirmed when it affirmed that conclusion. And those two policy reasons were that it is unreasonable to expect a landowner to be conversant with all activities of the independent contractors it hires, and all of these plaintiffs have the ability to recover workman's compensation. And those two policy considerations were the basis for the ROCA finding. What's happened here is the plaintiffs presented a set of facts in ROCA, tried to call them peculiar risk facts. This court denied their recovery under the peculiar risk doctrine. So now they've chosen to simply recast those very same facts and try to call them 343 facts. All of the policy considerations that went into supporting the ROCA decision apply here. None of those policy considerations have changed. And to ignore those policy considerations would require the reversal of the cases I just cited, would require the reversal of some rather long-standing asbestos case law, would significantly reduce worksite safety, since landowners would be inclined to use their own employees rather than hire experienced contractors familiar with the risk of the activities involved. I would also point out to your honors that the only three cases that have considered these exact same facts, or facts almost identical to these facts, have all rejected the position espoused by the plaintiffs and have all adopted the position espoused by the defendants. We cited you the Kinsman case. We also cited you the Wodger case. The Wodger case is a Maryland case brought by the Peter G. Angelos law firm, argued by Mr. Lilly, my worthy opponent here this afternoon, and they did the very same thing there. They presented the Wodger case to the lower court as a peculiar risk case. When that was rejected, they tried to recast the same facts as a 343 case, and the court said, no, without the exercise of control by the landowner, you cannot make a recovery under 343. The lower court here has already said there was no control by the landowner. We say that there has to be an element of control under 343 by virtue of this court's finding in Furyk. By the way, I would also mention to you that the plaintiffs take the position that the work was done in a workmanlike manner, which means a non-negligent manner. There are no 343 or 344 cases that allow recovery without a finding of a negligent or criminal act. The plaintiffs herein have denied any negligent act on the part of the contractor creating the hazard. Thus, there can't be a recovery. You know, in Davis versus Delaware State Educational Association, Justice Steele, you found that without a negligent act, there could be no recovery under Section 343. And that's exactly what's going on here. There's no negligent act. So I would also point out to you that adopting the plaintiff's position would lead to absurd results. It would require different standards for workers working on the same construction site. It would require different standards for contractors working on the same construction site. And it would cause a private landowner under Section 343 to bear greater liability than a commercial landowner under Section 344 does under the exact same facts. Unless this court is willing to overturn or ignore Furyk, I frankly don't see any way you can't find control as an element of 343. And as soon as you find control as an element of 343, the defendants have to win, because the lower court has said that there is no control exercise, and that has not been appealed here.
Well, let's assume that you've just delivered an enticingly attractive argument for your position. How come Judge Babiarz didn't get it?
Because he misunderstood Furyk. I mean, it's plain and simple. I with all due respect to Judge Babiarz, if you look at his treatment of Furyk in his opinion, he did not grasp the underlying concept. Sad to say, but that's my explanation. But what the plaintiffs are asking this court to do would require the reversal of the historic common law rule that has existed from time immemorial and has been engrafted into the Delaware case law, which holds that a landowner is not responsible for injuries arising from work performed by an independent contractor unless the landowner exercised control over the performance of that work. But let me try to give you a real quick example. A landowner, a general contractor, is building a high-rise building. So he's got 6 or 7 stories of steel erected. He's got people working on the 5th or 6th floor. He's got people working down below. The people working on the 5th and 6th floor bring, you pick it, plywood, drywall, up there. People down below don't know what's going on the 5th or 6th floor. The wind picks up, and some of the material blows off the 5th or 6th floor, lands on the people below, and injures them. Should the landowner be responsible? That's what these plaintiffs would have you hold. that it would have been our responsibility to warn the people below that the contractor up on the fifth or sixth floor might do something negligent. That doesn't make sense, with all due respect.
Did you want to save your rebuttal time?
I did, Your Honor, unless the court has questions for me. Thank you.
Please, court. Good afternoon. My name is Albert Mamor. I'm from Pepper Hamilton. I represent the defendant appellee, Honeywell International. And although Honeywell is an appellee in this matter, because the trial court granted summary judgment in favor of Honeywell International, its position in this appeal is more logically aligned with the positions and arguments of the other of the defendant appellants here. As to Mr. William and Biddle, with respect to Honeywell, they were both pipe fitters and they both used asbestos products directly in the course of their work, in particular gaskets at Honeywell's Claymont facility. In terms of Section 343, the plaintiffs stand here before the court and in the face of Sini and its rule, and Sini stands for the proposition here that a landowner is not liable to an independent contractor's employee for the dangers inherent in the performance of the work contracted for unless that landowner steps in and reasserts control over the manner and method of that work. In the face of that, the plaintiffs, or pardon me, the appellants in my case, appeal would have this court go back to Section 343 and state under Delaware Safe Workplace Doctrine that if the landowner knew or should have known of the alleged defect here, that they should have warned. Going back all the way to 343 would completely eviscerate Sini and its progeny and this long-standing rule. The Safe Workplace Doctrine in Delaware has traditionally been applied to pre-existing latent defects. More in 1988, it was extended in the context of social host liability in a fraternity hazing incident, the idea that a landowner had an obligation to control third parties vis-a-vis business invitees, but it has never been extended to contractor-created defects, defects that are inherent in the performance of contractor work. And that's Sini, and that's the progeny of Sini, that landowners don't have a duty to warn of contractor-created defects, and the reason for that is that there's a presumption when you hire an independent contractor that you're relying on that person's expertise to perform the work, that they can perform the work safely, and that they are knowledgeable about the materials in the work. And so, accordingly, there's no duty to warn. In the absence, though, of the landowner stepping back into the shoes, then, of that independent contractor and taking back control for the manner and method of work, how that's done. In those circumstances, then there a duty to warn re is imposed here. What plaintiffs want to do is they want to go all the way back to 343 and say, well, there is an obligation on the 340 to warn even of these contractor-created defects and reimpose that. But that would completely, we would overrule 20 years of longstanding precedent here in Delaware. The theory here is, and I think it bears mentioning here, that in ROCA, I think it's important to evaluate our position here, that many of the same policy purposes that the court reasoned in ROCA, and recall in ROCA we decided, or the court decided, not to extend vicarious liability to independent contractor employees under the peculiar risk doctrine. And sort of the rationale in ROCA was the reliance upon there's an independent contractor, there's a workers' comp remedy for that independent contractor's, and that others under the peculiar risk doctrine didn't include an independent contractor's employee, that was more geared to passerby and third parties, if you will. And so accordingly, those policy reasons have not changed, and they're still equally applicable here. For those reasons, Honeywell respectfully submits that while it agrees with the conclusion of the trial court, and the trial court found here in its opening few paragraphs in its opinion that if a independent contractor directly uses the products in the course of performing their work, that there is no liability applying the Sini rule. And for those reasons, Honeywell believes that the trial court granted summary judgment in its favor because Mr. Woolian and Mr. Biddle, as pipe fitters, were using directly in their pipe fitting work asbestos products, in particular gaskets. And while we submit that this conclusion is right, I think that there is a an interpretation of Section 343, Seney, and its active control exception that's more consistent with Delaware law. And that is that when you have a case of a contractor-created defect, there is no duty to warn, not only as to the contractor's employees, but to other independent contractors who may not have directly used or be involved with that work. And the reasoning is that that independent contractor who the landowner hired is really in the best position to warn not only their own people, but other independent contractor employees who may be working in the vicinity. Similarly, the workers' comp remedy is also supports, or that justification also supports, the application of Seney to other independent contractors who may not have been directly working with the product, because those independent contractors are also going to have a workers' comp remedy. And here also, recall in the Monk case, and I think that the court also referenced this in Roca, is the idea is that the landowner, when they hire an independent contractor, inherit in the contract price, a component of that is to pay for workers' comp insurance for that independent contractor. And by imposing liability on the landowner here, the landowner not only pays the first time when they pay the contract price, but then they pay a second time, and that's unfair. And that was one of the reasons in Monk, and one of the reasons I think this court also relied in Roca in not extending vicarious liability to independent contractor employees under the peculiar risk doctrine. Well, those same policies here are still in play. And although the plaintiff appellants would have this court take essentially the same facts, a contractor-created defect, an absence of control, and recast them, albeit under a different theory of liability, Section 343. But at the same time, the Seney rule and Merson, which relied upon Seney, and all the progeny and the active control exception, all that law will cease to exist. Plaintiffs will simply state in these cases, this is a Section 343 case, and you knew or should have known of this and had a duty to warn, and the whole contractor created defect, and the exception for active control simply won't exist. The same policies that issue in Roca that convinced this court in Roca to not extend liability to independent contractor employees apply here today. Those policies will be harmed by extending them to a Section 343 case. If I'm a landowner, and I believe 30 or 40 years from now, I'm going to be subject to liability for an independent contractor's work who comes onto my property that I relied upon, and I relied upon his or her expertise, I'm going to do the work myself. I'm not going to hire that independent contractor. And I'm going to do that because I know that if I use my own employees, I'm going to be protected by workers' comp immunity. And I'm going to have that available to me. And is that healthy? Is that what we're after? Because what we're after, I think, is safety. And that's part of the rationale of Seney and its progeny. And that's part of the reason why we shouldn't eviscerate that rule by allowing the plaintiff appellants to circle back and short-circuit Seney and its progeny. If I could just briefly touch upon the issue that Justice Holland hit upon the issue of specifications. There's a number of cases that have been cited in the Superior Court. In addition to Merson, there's Bryant. Bryant relies upon Seney, also in Kilgore. All those cases held that the mere act of specifying materials is not sufficient to demonstrate active control. And the cardinal fallacy in the argument of specification is that we as landowners are allowed to rely on the expertise of the contractor to handle those particular asbestos. Asbestos in and of itself is in danger. It can be handled. And it's only the act of telling that expert how to deal with their materials do you run into trouble. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
May it please the Court. Your Honors, this case involves 343 of the Restatement Second of Torts. And as we get back to that says that a premises owner has a duty when he discovers a latent defect upon the property that could endanger the invitees upon the property. And if it is such that the invitee may not be aware of it, he has certain duties to warn or to correct the defect. That's what this case is about. The circumstance of this case falls squarely within 343. undisputed, the defendants knew of the hazards of asbestos for decades. It's undisputed that they specified the use of asbestos at these job sites. It's undisputed that they knew that it's inevitable with the use of asbestos that it's going to go into the air and pollute the entire job site, and they knew that all at the job site would be at risk of harm. At that point, they had a duty. A duty long before we can talk about matter and method control, that is their duty at that point.
Didn't everyone working on all of these job sites know they were working with asbestos?
All of our clients did not work with asbestos. We had painters, for instance. You know, we're talking about matter and method control. And they controlled the matter and method of a painter. They said that you are to scrape the area horizontally, you're to paint it vertically, and the second coat be horizontally, and you're to use a 6-inch brush. Next to this painter who is doing that type of work is an insulator who's cutting asbestos insulation, and the air is filled with asbestos fibers.
I didn't ask my question.
I'm sorry.
Precisely.
I'm sorry.
And they all weren't working with it, but they were working with it or around it. You're saying that the painter had no idea what was going on next to him.
I'm saying that none of the people knew that asbestos was a hazard at these job sites, not the workers. If they had been warned, it would have been a different story. So, you know, if you control the manner and method of a painter, what's that have to do with this injury? This injury came from the insulators. The defendants cite cases in Delaware and tell you that matter and method control is 343. Well, we cited the case of Ham versus, I have a hard time with the Italian name, Your Honor. The Ham case, in which a homeowner who was converting his house into an office / a residence did some demolition. They called in an independent contractor, a carpenter, to finish the work. There was a latent defect in the roof. And during the work of the independent contractor, one of the beams fell, injuring the contractor. This court, on page 19 of our brief, we cited, says exactly what I say 343 is, a latent defect and duty. In that case, the homeowner could not have discovered the latent defect, so he was not responsible. But there's nothing about control of manner or method over the contractor's work. He is there to do his job. The general rule is that if you call a contractor in, an independent contractor, you leave him alone, you let him do the work according to his discretion, you were not liable. But then that calls in Chapter 15, which the defendants cite in every case. Chapter 15 is exceptions to that rule. Starting at 409 of Chapter 15, it says the exceptions to that rule are more numerous than when it is actually followed.
What's your response to Mr. Phillips' argument that we can't affirm this decision without overruling Furyk?
Furyk has nothing to do with this. Furyk involved a hazing incident at the University of Delaware. The issue in Furyk was foreseeability and duty of the university. They did not. There was no, you know, they argued the case as if the university stepped in and controlled the manner and method of the hazing. They suggested perhaps a smaller stick to beat the pledge with. That's not what the case said. The case says that in order to have a duty, the university must have the authority to control hazing. There's where the duty is. Not that they controlled hazing. In fact, the university was found potentially liable because, number one, they had a hazing policy. And number two, they attempted to discipline the fraternity who had done the hazing and injured this student. That student has nothing to do with control of the manner and method of the operations of the occupants of the building. In every instance, in these cases, if DuPont didn't have control of the premises, they wouldn't have a duty. And that's what Furyk is talking about. they do have absolute control over the premises. They have a duty because they knew of a hazard, of a latent condition on the property, and they didn't do anything about it.
I guess, with regard to the Maryland Court of Appeals case that you argued, would you say that was either distinguishable or just wrongly decided?
I'm a firm believer in stare decisis, Your Honor. But I think I have a little latitude here because I did Wager. Wager was decided on a Stedsup case decided in the Federal District Court of Maryland, in which the court correctly said, first of all, that in order to have 343 apply, you must have control of the premises. That's just what I said. The court in the next sentence says, and they start talking about his control of the independent contractors. Has nothing to do with the general premise that's of Maryland law, that you must have control of the premises in order to have a duty. Then it said, without any case now, that the control under 343 is just like 416. No authority for that proposition. And I'm sorry to say that the Court of Special Appeals of Maryland adopted this Fed sub case and said 416 is just like 343. Well, that's not true. There's no authority for that, and I don't want to be acting like I'm whining, but for Maryland to reverse existing decisions based upon a Fed sub case that's wrongly decided is, that is Wager. Wager says under Wells versus Western Electric, 416 control is just like 343, and that's wrong. There is no relationship between Chapter 15 exceptions to the general rule and 343, where the duty occurs at the point that you know that the latent defect exists on the property and that the invitees may not appreciate the danger. In every case cited by the defendants in this case, there are Chapter 15 exceptions to the general rule, causes of action, and a 343 claim. In every one of those cases, they have resolved the Chapter 15 cause of action by finding no control. And in every case, then they attacked the issue of 343. Diamond State, for instance, cited by the defendants, involved a lineman who was going to climb a pole to attach some wires. It was covered with poison ivy. He went up the pole anyway. His climbers got stuck in the vines. He fell. He sued under a Chapter 15 section involving control, and also under 343. The court resolved the Chapter 15 cause of action by saying there's no control, but it didn't stop there. It went to 343 and found out that and held that the vines were visible, they were apparent, it was not a latent defect, and 343 also did not apply. Throughout every case that they cite, Your Honors, has a 15-minute only or a 15 and a 343, and the courts in this case have consistently handled Chapter 15 as control, Chapter 343 as latent defects.
Is it an oversimplification to say that you make the distinction between control over the premises, which a landlord theoretically will always have, and control over the work done on the premises by the independent contractor?
I'm saying that Furyk says that there's no duty unless you have the you have the ability to control. Okay, but it's not that you control. You don't have a duty to act unless you have the authority to act. That's all that Furyk holds, and that's what I'm saying. Initially, DuPont, do they have the authority to, or do they have the responsibility to warn the invitee? If in fact he has leased out the property to someone else, he's the owner, and somebody else is running the show, they may not have a duty. That's all I'm saying. But there's no case in Delaware.
Well, what triggers the duty? Control of the premises or control of the work by the independent contractor?
I think what triggers the duty under 343 is the fact that you have the authority, over the premises, that you see a condition that the contractor may not appreciate as being dangerous, and that gives you a duty to tell the invitee there's a problem, don't go over here.
And the contractor who may not see that danger, in your case, is not the contractor doing the work with the asbestos, but employees of other contractors who are on the premises at the time but not involved directly with asbestos.
That's our position, Your Honor. Yes. Even though the court found that two of the plaintiffs potentially had used asbestos, these were pipe fitters who used gaskets. There was no evidence that these gaskets contained asbestos, that they gave off dust. Everyone blames the insulators who were cutting the pipe insulation, the block, and causing all of the damage.
What about the, for lack of a better term, the social policy arguments that you heard from other counsel? First, workers' comp is applicable, and second, this will discourage landowners from hiring expertise and dealing with defects, but they'll undertake to do it themselves.
If I could explain that, Your Honor. Let's go to the California cases. It started with Privet, and it goes to Kinsman. Basically, what the policy considerations in those California cases are is that they were started out as under peculiar risk, Chapter 15, exception to the general rule. And they held that Chapter 15 is vicarious liability. In those cases, you have a guilty independent contractor who negligently performed the work and an innocent owner. For policy reasons, whatever owner has, for instance, a peculiar risk situation where he's asked for ultra-hazardous work to be done on his property, the independent contractor is the one who caused the injury, but on a public policy ground, the owner got the benefit of the hazardous activity and he wanted it. And to ensure that a third party is compensated for his injury, there's vicarious liability directed toward the owner just to ensure that the independent contractor is competent to pay the bill, that he hasn't gone into bankruptcy. You want to, first of all, to give recovery to the innocent third party. In this case, Your Honor, it's just exactly the opposite. We have innocent independent contractors. In fact, we have people who were hurt whose contractor wasn't even using asbestos. And we have a guilty owner because he violated duties under 343 that he knew. He specified asbestos. He knew the air would be filled with the dust. He knew that it was latent because it doesn't cause you to itch, scratch, cough, or sneeze. The disease only occurs 20, 30, 40 years after exposure. It's obviously latent, and he allowed these workers to work there. So I don't think there is a consideration between an innocent landowner who's just vicariously liable because of public policy and an owner who had the knowledge, who had to come on the place, did not warn, who is guilty, and who are you putting the workman's compensation on? An innocent contractor who never used asbestos. I'm a painting contractor. Why is my workman's compensation being charged? And we have to look at the statutory scheme in Delaware. The statutory scheme in Delaware is that there must be an employment relationship. And Delaware says that filing a complaint is not selecting a remedy, the sole remedy, that you have the absolute right to sue anyone who is responsible for your injury. So when you talk about social, you know, proof that I don't agree with, but I can see the social ramifications. You want to recompense the innocent third party who was injured. You've got a contractor, but you're not sure that he's going to be around to make the payment. Why not subject the property owner, who is innocent, to vicarious liability just to ensure that the innocent third party is paid? That doesn't apply here, Your Honor, and it doesn't apply under the statutory scheme. And Delaware is not California anyway. But I would say, Your Honor, that all of the cases cited by the defendants in this case are Chapter 15 superimposed over a 343 claim. And of course, you know, like in Furyk, control is mentioned in Furyk, but it's called control of the premises, and it's the ability to control. It has nothing to do with that manner and method control over the hazing incident. In these cases, yes, control is mentioned. But control is mentioned in relation to a Chapter 15 claim. And in each instance, Your Honor, the 343 resolution was completely separate from control. I mean, this all has to make some logical sense. I mean, if DuPont cut a hole in the property and put a flimsy piece of plywood over it and invited invitees upon the property, and somebody fell through the hole, if you ask DuPont, are we responsible? They'd say, maybe. Where did this guy work? Was he working for an independent contractor? If the man who fell worked for an independent contractor, then I have to control his manner and method. That's not the law.
Well, DuPont might phrase it a little differently. If they hired an independent contractor to come in and fix the hole and there was somebody painting nearby and the independent contractor over whom they exercise no day-by-day, hour-by-hour, minute-by-minute supervision let loose a power tool and struck that painter, they might conclude that the independent contractor would be responsible, but not the landowner.
The exposure to asbestos was an inevitable when, and known to DuPont when they signed the contract. There isn't like you had a crazy a contractor who did something wrong. They knew that it was going to exist. It had to exist. They required it to exist.
But did they know it would be handled by the independent contractor in such a way as to allegedly harm employees of other independent contractors on the premises?
Your Honor, from my experience, you cannot hammer asbestos off a pipe to get to it and to repair it without dust. There were other solutions. You know, we were acting like in a vacuum. They could have scheduled the work so that the insulation is done at a different time. They could have put up barricades saying, don't go over there, we've got insulators at work. They could have wrapped it in plastic. They could have wetted it down. They could have done a lot of things.
Now, by they, do you mean DuPont or the independent contractor they hired to handle the asbestos?
I think we've established that DuPont had a duty, so I am talking about DuPont, because they had a duty to the independent contractor or the invitees upon the property to do something, and they did nothing. They scheduled the work. They could have scheduled the insulation work at a different time period. They could have scheduled the pipe fitters and the painters to be someplace else.
So you're suggesting it's more than a duty to warn?
Oh, yes, Your Honor. I think it is. Yes, it's more than the 343 doesn't say what you're supposed to do. It puts a duty on you to do that if that's reasonable. It's not just warning. It could be putting up a barrier. It could be scheduling the work. It could be wetting it down.
Let me make sure I understand this. So your interpretation is that this is not a duty simply to warn case, that a landlord in the situation is DuPont would hire an independent contractor they believed had expertise in handling asbestos, and yet when that independent contractor hired on the basis of their expertise comes to the site, DuPont's supposed to direct them as to how they're supposed to handle the asbestos. Otherwise, they fail to perform a duty owed to them and employees of other independent contractors on the premises.
Your Honor, I'm not prepared to say what DuPont should have done, but the law of Delaware is that they have to do what is reasonable. It could be just warning them, why don't you wear a respirator? It could be, I can't tell what's reasonable, Your Honor, and that's outside of my purview. But they have a duty. And the resolution of that duty is to do what is reasonable. And they did nothing. The asbestos exposure suffered by these men was inevitable because they wanted it used. What DuPont is a lot more sophisticated than I am as to what they believe should have reasonably been done. But I submit to you that nothing was done. It was unreasonable, and they had a duty. And they had a duty long before the contractors got there and to be controlled matter and method-wise by DuPont. That has nothing to do with this. absolutely nothing to do, because the duty arose at the time that they knew of the condition, that it was hazardous, that in all likelihood the contractors wouldn't understand it. And the testimony in this case from our clients is that they did not know at the time that they were on the premises, and I keep saying DuPont, but all of the defendants, they did not know of the dangers of asbestos when they were working in that dust. The dust was benign. The dust was part of the job. DuPont knew it wasn't. DuPont had a duty under 343. Your Honor, there is no case in Delaware that puts any kind of control on a 343 case. The defendants say that their whole case depends upon Furyk. I've read Furyk. They've read Furyk. Furyk had to do with, did the University of Delaware have a duty, not whether they control the matter and method of the hazing, which is what's being argued by the defendants. They had a duty because they had a policy. They had a duty because they attempted to discipline the fraternity. University of Delaware in that case was then potentially liable because they had exercised what they thought was their authority, and a duty perhaps existed, and that was up to a trial on the merits to determine whether in fact that duty did exist. So if Furyk is their case, and that's what they're depending on, Furyk does not support manner and method control of the contractors. You know, we have to take this outside of the context. Are we going to rule that by accident of employment, we have certain protected people and certain people that aren't? 343 doesn't, you know, we hold ourselves to a job site situation, but 343 happens out in the real world. In a supermarket with a lettuce leaf is laying on the floor and someone steps on it and falls. The first words out of the manager of the supermarket is, "Where do you work?" If you work for an independent contractor, I don't have a duty.
You don't seriously believe that example works in this case, do you? A business invitee to a grocery store is the same thing as the employee of an independent contractor that the grocery store brings in to fix the refrigerator? You don't seriously want to...
I said, Your Honor, that 343 has application outside of this, and if these independent contractors were not using asbestos, were not doing anything that would have caused harm to them, why would we treat them differently simply because of the accident of employment? Simply because they work for an independent contractor, as a painter, for instance, why would we treat them differently than a person who was on the job site making a delivery? We shouldn't. That's not the law. There is no allegation in this case that any contractor did anything wrong. They did it in a workmanlike manner, all of them. None of the workers in this case had knowledge at that time of the hazards of asbestos. I submit to Your Honor that 343 applies. 343, the duty occurred at the time of the discovery of the possibility of the latent dangerous defect, and not what they did later by what kind of control that they exercised over the various independent contractors who had nothing to do with the injury. Your Honor, I apologize for the if you think I went too far, but I do believe that 343 does apply to the outside world, and if in fact you rule in here that independent contractors are treated differently in this setting, what's to stop us from arguing later that because you work for an independent contractor at a supermarket that you're not treated differently? Any questions? Thank you.
Briefly, Your Honors, Jack Phillips on behalf of defendants. First of all, Mr. Lilly suffers from the problem that he fails to recognize that under 343, a landowner is only liable for latent defects, and the Ham versus Romano case that he cites and relies upon was clearly a latent defect. He then goes to the Diamond State case and says, well, they never got to 343, and that's because Diamond State, just like Niblett versus Pennsylvania Railroad, was an open and obvious defect, just like his example of the grocery store. There's something laying on the floor, it's open and obvious, it's there to be seen. But his entire argument is based on a premise that the use of asbestos is an ultra-hazardous activity. And we've already determined that that's not true. That is not the law in this state. The hazard arises from the way in which the independent contractor works with the asbestos. And all of the things that Mr. Lilly claims the landowner should have done are something that the person working with the asbestos was best able to do. That is, the plaintiff would have this court ignore the principle that the person or entity in control of the work being performed is the one that should be held responsible for the same. The contractor performing the work is in the best position to warn any and all others in the work area of the hazards that are arising or associated with its work. Making the contractor fully responsible for the hazards associated with its work serves the laudable goal of encouraging the contractor to accept safety responsibilities and implementing those responsibilities. Making the landowner vicariously liable undermines that goal and is inherently unfair because it shifts responsibility from the hazard creating contractor to the innocent landowner who has no control over either the plaintiff's work or the hazard creating contractor's work. This would require the landowner to be aware of any and all hazards that would occur by virtue of all contractors and their subcontractors working on the premises. That's an unreasonable burden. That burden was specifically rejected in ROCA. That was one of the two policy reasons for Judge Babiar's decision in ROCA. That and the existence of the availability of comp. And comp is indeed available here. You know, Mr. Lilly's premise that somehow DuPont was aware of the hazard of anything that might happen is simply not in the record and not reasonable and contrary to the whole thought behind the Sini line of cases, and that is that you never get to knowledge. It's the control over the activity. You might have knowledge that the excavation trench might collapse, but that's not the point. You know, the point here is that what you have is a situation where the hazard is created after these people have come onto the premises by work of another independent contractor who's supposed to be the expert. That contractor has control over the work site. They have the duty to work properly, that is, in a non-negligent manner. The duty to warn is traditionally imposed on the party that has the ability to create or avoid the hazard.
Mr. Phillips, Mr. Lilly argued to us, as I recall in any event, that DuPont's duty flows from the fact that harm was inevitable. Does the record support that no matter what methodology the independent contractor handling the asbestos employed, that any other employees of independent contractors not associated with that asbestos work would inevitably be injured?
No, it does not, Your Honor. And the mere fact that Mr. Lilly stood here and recited a number of things that he says could have been done and should have been done, could have barricaded the site, could have wet it down, could have wrapped it, goes to demonstrate the fact that harm was not inevitable. His entire argument is premised on the fact that the use or working with asbestos is an ultra-hazardous activity. That's simply not true. It's not correct. He gave you examples of things that could be done to avoid that harm. And he's just absolutely dead wrong in his reading of Furyk. He continues to tell this court that Furyk was based on the mere ability to control. That's not at all what Furyk says. Direct quote out of Furyk on page 522. The duty of the university to regulate and supervise should be limited to those instances where it exercises control. And then the court went on, if you're to analyze what the university had done to exercise control over hazing. They'd been aware of it for 5 years. They had written letters. They had called the presidents of the various fraternities in for a lecture. They had written letters directly to this fraternity that was involved in this incident prior to the incident. So this was all things they had actually attempted to control. DuPont, like any other landowner, has the right to cede control to these independent contractors. Don't overlook the fact that your holding here today will impact all landowners, not just the industrial landowners before you today, but commercial landowners, large and small, and every homeowner in the state of Delaware. So is a homeowner supposed to understand every little hazard that might be created by the work of two or three contractors he calls in to do a house renovation project? and stand there and be aware of those hazards and give warnings? That's untenable. And that's exactly what ROCA held. The landowner can't be aware of all the hazards. The entity creating the hazard is the one best able to warn of it and control it. It's not good tort law to split the duty to warn away from the party that has the actual control and causes the hazard. The duty to warn and the control over the activities about which there should be a warning rightfully belong to the same party. That is that independent contractor who's supposed to be an expert in that field.
Thank you,
Your Honors.
Thank you, counsel. We'll take the case under advisement and adjourn.
Please rise. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. All manner of persons having anything before the Supreme Court of the State of Delaware may now depart and give their attendance to the call of the court. The court is now adjourned. God save the state and the honorable court.